Hey folks, Jeff Salzman here, and welcome to the March Community Call for the Integral Living Room. I'm here in Boulder, Colorado tonight and am joined by my co-hosts at the Integral Living Room, Diane Hamilton and Terry Patton. Say hello to everyone, Di.
Hi, everybody. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy and fruitful day to join us. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Indeed. And hey, Terry. Say hello.
Hey.
How you doing?
I'm great. Good to be here with you, Jeff, and Di, and everybody. I'm delighted
cool.
to be back in the living room.
Yeah, the living room is a frame of mind. It's a place where we go monthly by phone in virtual space and talk about really just what is it to be in integral community and what is the integral movement. And what does that mean to us? And how are we a part of that? And how can we feed that and be fed by that? And the integral community itself is less than 10 years old, really, internationally. And we've come a long way. One of the things that is really coming to the fore in terms of a new emergent in the community itself is a focus on the community, a focus on second person, a focus on getting together. And that's really the driving creative idea of the Integral Living Room. Diane and Terry and I, with Ken and the Integral Institute, worked on Integral seminars for several years and had many hundreds of people come through Denver and Boulder. And what we found was that the best parts of these events would be the conversations between the sessions. I mean, the sessions were great, too. So, you know, with that in mind, and as a sort of our creative spark, we've started the Integral Living Room so that we can really just build it around conversations and get people who are really interested in this subject of, you know, practicing to be integral, practicing integral second person, to get together and do that intentionally. And so, as I say, we have the calls every month, and then we have our in-person sessions in Boulder. And our next event is at the end of May, Memorial Day weekend, starting on May 23rd. So it's a three-day event, and you can check it out at theintegrallivingroomonline.com. So tonight, we're going to look at specifically at the second person. As we say in Integral, we are evolving in three different dimensions of life in terms of our own individual I space, my Jeffness, you know, my own mind, my own soul, my own spirit, and then in second person, in relationship, in culture, in family, in friendship. And our thesis is that every stage of development has a new sort of physics of relationship. If we look back at traditional and modern and postmodern, they're all different. What's integral bring to the party? And since we consciously know we're creating that, what are we actually creating? So we want to look at that tonight. We have an excerpt from Ken. We did a conversation with Ken about this. And, of course, he thinks the most beautiful thoughts about these things. So we'll share some of those with you. But I think we'll start now just by bouncing around a little bit between the three of us. And so I invite you, Terry, to share what you're thinking about this topic on this beautiful evening.
Mm. Well, it's, you know, it's interesting. Our expectations of what's possible in terms of contact with other people are evolving so rapidly. In the Fiddler on the Roof, the song "Do You Love Me" begins. Tevye begins to wonder if his wife loves him, and asks her the question. He goes, "What do you mean? You know, for 40 years I've borne your children, I've shared your bed, I've cooked your meals, I've washed your clothes. Now you're asking if I love you." back in the shtetl, it really there wasn't much of an expectation, and now in our primary intimacies with our partners, we want to be deeply, deeply gotten and seen. We want the authentic qualities of that other person to come forward in a way that thrills us and that synergizes with what's most awake in us, and we want a quality of contact that touches our humanity and our vulnerability as well as what's most evolutionarily alive at the edge of our process. We really want to be less alone in the full spectrum of who we are. And we don't easily find that. The fullness of the soulmate experience tends to bloom very fully for most people during a honeymoon period, and not, you know, and then there's work in a, maybe a very fulfilling work in an intimacy that is absolutely rich and worthwhile, but the sense of having to cross a certain gap is there. You know, there's a great line in Leonard Cohen's one of his songs, Baby, Let's Get Married. We've been alone so long. Let's be alone together. Let's see if we're that.
And, I love that.
Yeah, it really says something.
Can I say
so?
Can I say something real quick, Terry?
Yeah.
It reminds me of the New York Times cartoon that was I read about a year ago, and it was in relationship to the gay marriage debate. And basically, a woman was reading the paper, and she said, "Gays marry? Haven't they suffered enough?" Getting married so we can be alone. I like
well,
that
exactly.
idea of getting
you know,
married.
And in a way, the integral conversation about this is exactly what's just happening here, the way that we're able to out ourselves and laugh and be real about the agony of contact and non-contact, the gap that we can't close.
You can't give us no agony-free options. Come on.
Well, you know, I really think it's the way that we're able to take the risk of being as raw and real as we are and come forward. Like the fact that at the last living room, we took all kinds of risks and fought with each other in front of everybody and were in the midst of the edges of our intimacy and really broke through in such a heart-open way. I mean, my experience of the first living room, one of the reasons I'm so energized and enthusiastic about what it is we're doing here culturally is that we just met each other in the ways that it's hard and in a way that didn't, I don't know, kind of paint a glossy surface over the rawness, but that for that to hang out and for us to be coming alive in ways that, I don't know, that kind of provoked us to new levels of kind of improvisation and authenticity and freshness and nakedness, that's to me, second-tier intimacy. The second-tier intimacy is where you trust life so much that you are kind of ragged and wild and free and unadorned. And I feel like that began to emerge. And it's the potential for us to begin to be that way more and more freely and fully as a community and for the experiment of what we do together to have that kind of edgy life and unpredictability and improvisational wildness. That's what really turns me on.
Right on.
Anytime you finish a little conversation with a sentence like that's what turns me on, I think that that's worthwhile. So we're talking about intimacy and what turns you on, what turns us on, and that's important because what does it mean to live an erotic life or to be connected to Eros except to be turned on, to be enlivened, to be awake, as we like to say. So my thoughts, Jeff, is it my turn or did I interrupt?
Yeah, I think it's your turn.
My turn, okay. So integral intimacy, one of the things that, you know, the postmodern community, all of us on the call who've been in spiritual communities and done a lot of spiritual practice, or we've been in psychological communities or in group processes, or we've been in therapy, I know I have, maybe not as much as I need, but we've been in this huge developmental step where we've actually tried to bring a new level of intimacy to our relationships. You know, it's the bringing of the deep subjectivity online, what you called being seen, being gotten, being listened to, being heard, that we're really trying to exchange at a much deeper level. But most of the time you're in communities where communities might be really good at spiritual practice, but the personal exchange is maybe a little short-tripped, if that's a word. Or if you're in communities of communication and psychology, there might be a lot of emphasis on the relational domain, but it doesn't have that deep recognition of the absolute potential. And so in this community, what I appreciate is that there's space for both the absolute perspective, which really is beyond our personal connection, and yet the personal connections happen within a context of awakening, and they are really important, and they're nurturing, and that we grow through them, and they're completely necessary, but they're not mistaken for the absolute. I think there's a lot of spiritual and psychological communities that put a lot of emphasis on intimacy, and intimacy becomes a substitute for realization. And my personal belief is that what do you want to say? That's funny.
Well, no, that's I just want to pause. Intimacy becomes a substitute for realization.
Yeah,
I've been there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been in communities where that was true. Lots of them.
I want both.
And well, precisely. The whole point is that we have the capacity to realize both. You know, and to see that, as Dogen Zenji says in the Zen tradition, that enlightenment, his definition for enlightenment is intimacy with all things.
Wow.
And love itself can be described as the willingness to be fully present to whatever you experience. That is love, and love is the crown jewel of the second person. Love is the flower of intimacy. But that might be different than just making contact with someone in such a way that I get a big oxytocin hit and I mistake oxytocin for realization. And I think that sometimes the emphasis on, you know, this deep interrelational practice can be overstretched, in the same way in some spiritual communities they don't make enough contact with one another. So in this community, what I really love is that there's possibility for both, and that we can see how our relationships support our realization, and how our realization deepens our relationships, you know, because I'm not going to hold you to all kinds of relative conditions, because I know ultimately my job is to let you be who you are, as opposed to demanding that you be a certain way. But I would just say for our listeners that one of the things I appreciate so much about my relationship with Jeff and Terry or other people that I've worked with in the integral world is I feel like I can bring more of myself online, meaning I can bring my Zen practice to the table. I can have a conversation in which, you know, we share a lot of intimacy, we disclose, we share vulnerability, we're transparent, those sort of traditional hallmarks of intimacy. But then in the next breath, it just gets hilarious and really funny, like it did a minute ago. And then in the next breath, we can be challenging to one another. So the intimacy that I experience has a lot to do with my own capacity to show up more fully than I might be able to in other communities. And I really appreciate both you and, you know, Jeff and Terry, both of you, because I feel like in a certain way, because of your own self-relation and the depth of your own practice, you have more space for me, and therefore I get to be more of who I am. And that just really means a lot to me. And I'm still growing. I mean, my development is dependent on your willingness to engage with me, and all of us are evolving together. It's one thing to evolve. Human beings can evolve a little bit by themselves, but we're in large part really dependent on, and we all know this from our families, we can't get way out ahead of the crowd and still be in relationship. The culture is moving with us. So I like that, you know, being less alone with one another and looking for more depth and span, you know, just more capacity to be more fully who we are without being greedy, I guess I should say. So that's kind of my two cents on this topic for right now.
Wow. Well, thank you, Di. I'm going to make a couple comments on that. But before I do, I just want to say that we will get into some process where we'll hear from you coming up, and we're excited about that. And we're working on how is it that we create good community and good Wii space actually using this phone technology, because it has its limits. But, you know, here we are all around the world together. So I want to say that, and that also I meant to say that we would end this call in about, actually, 55 minutes from now, so a quarter after the hour, and that's our goal. So, so what you just said, Di, that really got the wheels turning in my mind is this idea of second-person realization versus intimacy, not versus necessarily, but the difference between those. And it helps me because I feel like, as an Enneagram 5, you know, kind of an egghead type, I'm a little, at sea when there was this idea of intimacy as it's particularly been presented at Green, which is, I never know if I'm bearing my heart or, do I need to look you in the eye and do I have to cry and, do I have to, I just never quite know what to do. And that you can sort of stake out this territory. I mean, I'm actually having a realization in real time, if you will, that there's actually another field we can play in that's not necessarily that what I always thought was sort of sappy and sentimental and I was not functional in. That the process of actually just continuing to see you and accommodate you and challenge my resistances to you and to consciously have more of you in the field that I share with you. Good Lord, that's suddenly I have a clearer idea of what my second person practice is. And I thank you for that.
Yeah. Well, I think that is our practice. It's to start to really pay attention to, the ways in which we completely are enlivened by one another and how we resist that at a certain level. So.
Well, and the other thing, if I may, Di, you were talking about this book that you've been reading that has got you sort of in touch with these sort of amber or traditional values that also mm-hmm. show us a way of, Wii space practice in a way.
Yeah. Well, maybe I could just say a little something about that, from a developmental perspective. And for those of you who are new to thinking about development, don't trouble yourself over it too much. Anything that lands for you that somehow, stimulates you or enlivens you, listen to that and don't worry about the rest. But at different levels of human development, belonging looks different. So if we look at what we call the mythic meaning level of development, there are lots of values were held in very strong organizational structures in which loyalty, friendship, sacrifice, discipline, going the long haul, kind of, you can think of it in a certain way like how you're trained if you're in the Army, that you're basically preparing to go through hard things together. It's a little like your marriage vows, through sickness and in health. And there's just a sense of preparing for the long haul and preparing for difficulty, which requires for you to, in a certain way, look to the community and look to larger aspects of yourself and give up your individual identity. And then when we move to a more rational, materialistic level of development, to some degree our belonging has to do with our capacity to accomplish together. Whether it's in business or whether it's in law or whether it's, in women's rights. But, like, we come together because we want to make our mark on the world. We're no longer, we're no longer organizing for survival in hard times and stability. We're now organizing to attain and accomplish. So that belonging has a different quality to it. And then when we move into the pluralistic level of development, what we start to notice is that we want to bring our subjectivity forward. We want our emotions to finally have a place. We want to disclose our true feelings about being human, not just simply the brave side of who we are, but our vulnerability, our fear, men are encouraged to express their feeling states, to women. And sometimes there's a kind of highly feminizing process that goes on where we spend a lot of time in process and feeling states. And what you find is that people get very good at conversation. They get very good at talking about their wants and needs. They get really good at paying attention, but they don't hang out in relationships so long. They lose the values of the earlier memes, which in a certain way support us to really go the long haul. And I've just recently been kind of looking into those those values of loyalty, friendship, sacrifice, you know, self, the discipline to give yourself up to a larger purpose, and really finding at this stage in my life a lot of meaning in that. And so the fact that we could kind of integrate different levels of what belonging feels like, and explore the part of different parts of ourselves in terms of belonging. I'm interested in people. I have a husband who, you know, somebody told me the other day that noble isn't in one in a translation is a word for stability. To be noble is to be stable. I have an extremely noble husband. He's extremely, you know, loyalty and sacrifice and discipline and going the long haul and putting your heart on the line in that way. He's extremely good at it, and I really have learned from him, I think, to appreciate that. So our togetherness and our intimacy and our belonging has different textures at different points in our development. So those are just some additional thoughts.
Yeah. Fantastic, Di. Thank you so much. Terry, anything that's on your tip of your tongue?
Well, I am reflecting on this because to me, the way that awakening can be the ground for contact with others, and it can also be the ground for avoidance of contact, comes up. And I find myself feeling the qualities of intimacy that have arisen in spiritual communities where a shared ecstasy creates a ground for a kind of really very deep parts of ourselves to come forward and resonate together in a way that's really satisfying. And yet the fact that we're learning about all of that in new ways, and that in integral community we're in a process of both engaging the states and entering into these different possibilities and sometimes going to such vulnerable places and then taking perspectives on it and seeing what we can see and standing back in a third-person way and understanding the pattern of it. I know one of the things that was particularly energizing at the last event was stirring the pot in a way that really helped us feel the places that we were in conflict, and the conflict brought us into more intimacy. And I think that was something that, you know, you have a peculiar genius in that, Di. And all of those things bring us forward into a place where whatever plan we have, whatever rehearsed approach we have, whatever we already have learned has to be left behind, and something is just alive and it's emergent and you don't know what it's going to be next, and everybody's just kind of improvising and dancing on the edge of the emergent. And in doing that together, we come alive and we come into contact with one another in a way that is intimate, not just with each other, but with the Tao, with the emergent. And I feel like that's the quality that we touched upon in the first living room and that I'm hoping we're going to go into so much more in the one this May.
Yeah.
And that I guess I feel more trust. It's kind of like we've fought so much, we've been in and out of it together so much, the three of us, that I know we'll do it wrong, and so I'm not afraid of doing it wrong. We're going to be messy no matter what, and that's part of the perfection of it. And in that, somehow there's a trust that allows that emergent dance to really happen.
No, it's I just can't wait, basically. So thanks, Terry. Yeah, so let's hear from Ken on this. The segment we're going to play is from a conversation that Diane and Terry and I had with Ken several weeks ago in preparing for this. And it's interesting to work with Ken on the Integral Living Room because Ken gets sort of energized by people who are working with integral theory. And so, you know, here we are doing this, you know, this real intentional work in second person, getting people together and just using conversation as the actual engine of the practice itself. And so he gets engaged in that. And he thinks such beautiful thoughts. I said that before. And as one of his thoughts that has been most beautiful to me is that thoughts themselves are things. And that the thoughts we think actually add to the storehouse of human wisdom that is being built, and that every thought we think really matters. And it's interesting to sort of, you know, think in those terms. And that was sort of the first person practice that we talked about in the last call. Tonight, we have Ken talking about the second person, this miracle of we, and how we move into second-person practice the same way that we work with first-person practice, and that we work with things like appreciation and taking the role of other. And the segment starts with a question from Diane and a sharing from Diane. So we'll start there, and that goes on for a couple minutes, and then Ken's response is about 8 minutes, and then we'll be back, and then together we'll work with this for a little while. Okay?
Yeah, we'll get
so
to
just
hear
sit
from
back.
You.
Exactly. So at Di, Terry, anything? We'll start Ken here.
Yeah, just we're going to listen to Ken weigh in, and then we'll have some small discussions and listen to everyone else as well.
Super.
Here we go.
Okay, Brett, press play. Thanks.
What often happens when I'm listening and we're in this discussion is I feel like some experience within the integral movement is an expression of everything that we're describing, in the sense that my own personal practice and my inquiries and watching my own evolution as a so-called small self who's clarifying fear and who's relinquishing negativity and tapping into my own evolutionary capacity. And in some ways what that does is that puts me in touch with a whole group of creative geniuses who've done a lot of the same work, and that as we evolve and we move into the second person and we start to experience more consciousness, which expresses itself as love, as care, as inclusion, we necessarily need one another. We necessarily are evolving together precisely because this evolution is happening in all four quadrants. So therefore, I need others in a way that I didn't need in quite the same way when I was just working with my own, so to speak, awakening. And so this recognition that awakening is happening four quadrants or in, you know, all three perspectives, and then the question that we ask ourselves is, well, what is the living room in relationship to this unfolding? What exactly is its function? Why are we there? Well, we're there to acknowledge the evolution of the small self and the soul self, the recognition of the true self, and then manifesting in all of those dimensions, because it's gross, subtle, causal in all four quadrants. So what is our function together? Well, our function is precisely, as Ken mentioned, to deeply appreciate the other, to genuinely learn how to listen to each other, and to assume that we don't quite know, and Ken was very profound on this in the last living room, and I think we all picked it up, which is we don't actually know how we're evolving, but we do know the conversations about this process matter, that there are grooves laid down through how we're conceiving together, how we're speaking together, and ultimately what first person, the ILP, second person, the so-called IWP that's still being developed, and then what we can offer to the world in terms of our respective karma and what the world needs, and maybe seeing ourselves as namers and mappers, and that's what we offer people more than anything else. Maybe some of us are social entrepreneurs and some of us are inventors and whatever we happen to be, but the fact is what we all have in common is that we name and map, and maybe that's what we work together with in the second person. You know, so those are just my thoughts about the importance of this event. What is this event? Why are we continuing to work together all this time?
I think those are great points. I really love the idea about moving from working, you know, on yourself as an individual to realizing that this is actually a process, you know, occurring across the board in all of these dimensions and all of these quadrants. And therefore, it takes a certain type of interaction as well as simply, you know, an individual practice. And so whenever we come together and whenever we create a we, that we, it's an actual entity, and it actually has its own life, and it will continue to grow and develop. And every time we come together, it gets a little bit thicker. It has a little bit more history. And so it has a little bit more mutual understanding, and therefore a little bit more development. And with more development, therefore, it has more depth. And more depth means it has more spirit. And so it's a process that is actually growing and developing and, in a sense, moving towards its own type of enlightenment. I think that is something that we can look at the living room as being a part of that overall recognition. And that every time we come together and do that, every time we even have these conversations, that we really are, you know, laying down these grooves, these cosmic habits and those will come to fruition. One of the key components to listening with second person, one of them, of course, is I talked about before, which is establishing an appreciation. Just any single thing you can find that you can appreciate about the other person, it just seems to open the doors in a really astonishing way. But the other point that is worth keeping in mind is that you want to actually attempt to take the role of other. And so that means not just sort of sitting here and seeing them, you know, kind of out there and then listening to what they say and trying to hear it and so on. But it's actually attempting to, you know, put yourself in their shoes. We say, you know, walk a mile in the other person's shoes. But actually trying to see how they see the world, including how they are seeing you. Or maybe if three or four people are talking, you can attempt to see how that person is seeing other people. But every time you do that, you're genuinely entering that inner subjective field. And it's not just, you know, two subjects talking at each other or talking past each other or whatever, but it's actually that intersubjective glue. It's that entering the actual awareness of the other person. And ultimately, in a sense, this is going to be done because there's one spirit, one self. And so to the extent that you are taking the role of other, you are getting closer to your own true self as it's looking out of the eyes of another. And so that just increases the bonding of that we in a really profound way. And so it's appreciating and it's taking the role of other. And those are both two really profound things that most people tend not to do. And so that's, again, one of the reasons that most people don't really hear what the other person is saying, let alone understand what the other person is saying. And so that's, you know, a way that we expand, in a sense, starting with listening to ourselves and being able to, you know, hear our own next moment and then expanding that into a we. And one of the ways you can hear the next moment of the we is by actually entering that inner subjective field, actually taking the role of other and attempting to see through their eyes and feel what they're feeling and hear what they're hearing and so on. And that can make a profound difference in the we space as well. So it's not just relating. It's relating from the interior.
And in a way, this actually has quite a profound effect on the subtle field, the subtle bodies, all the
kinds of
transformation you were just elaborating.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Because those, it's especially, in a sense, subtle and causal bodies are easier to exchange.
Mm.
Gross bodies are already taking up a certain kind of space, and if you actually try to put yourself in the other person's gross body, you just smash into them. But it's through subtle and causal, and mental, cognitive, and so on, that you can actually take the role of other. You can't do it with, you know, just a feeling or just a gross bodily attempt.
Well, thank you, Ken. And I'm sitting here thinking that, well, you know, actually there is a way of doing that in the physical body, and that is, you know, the penetration of sex, and there is that extra, you know, emergent quality of wow that comes out of that. And, you know, so in a way
totally.
It's all like seducing each other, and I love that.
We don't actually do those as experiential exercises at the living room.
No, we don't.
So
we draw the line
there. Scare people away.
We don't agree on exactly. You know, we include.
Not yet. Not yet.
We include decency.
That's the integral bedroom.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
We'll do that.
We're going to move to the integral bedroom. That's fun. That is stunning. Well, let's open this conversation up a little bit. What I'd like to invite is, so, you know, what Ken's talking about is our capacity in relationship to practice listening, appreciating, and really putting ourselves in the position of the other. What I think Jeff and Terry and I would be interested in, and hopefully others of you on the call, would be just to hear, we've been having this conversation about intimacy, what has come up for you, what has been most stimulating to you, is there anything that's been said that resonated for you, or is there anything new that you'd like to bring into the conversation about intimacy, and if you have something you'd like to say, I'd like to invite you to press 1 on your handheld. And what I'm going to do is I will call on you, and I'm going to actually limit everybody to 1 minute, and then that way we can get to a number of different people before we move into just a small listening exercise and dyad. So I'm wondering, Ben Levy, would you be willing to lead us off on this? Just 1 minute of what had the most meaning for you and what's coming up for you in this moment.
For the opportunity. I've been sitting here thinking what I should be saying. Okay, so here's what came to me. Intimacy has to do with right distance in relationship at any given time between two or more people. So there can be intimacy far away. There can be intimacy close, having sex. Intimacy is this nature of this dynamic relationship between us all. And what I sense in my life is that with each person, I actually have this sense of co-comfort, intimacy, and that a lot of times what I can do is play with that edge and maybe go a little bit more intimate, but not too much, in order to see how open I can continue to be. That's my...
Will you give us an example, like in this moment? Is that, can you do that in this moment? Can you show us that, what that looks like for you?
Well, I'm in relationship with the three of you who I've had this conversation with for the last 15 or 20 minutes, and I'm also in relationship with all this list of people that I'm seeing on my screen here, some of which I know personally. Each one of them, there's a certain kind of sense of intimacy that I feel with them, and that it's a useful practice to see where that edge is in my heart with each person, because it's going to be different with each person, to sense how I may be feeling more open or closed with each one. So for me, it's more of this dance. Intimacy is the dance. That's what I'm thinking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very good. Nice. Very good. Thank you. Sharana, would you be willing to share your reflections, whatever's coming up for you now?
Let's see. I'm actually, I have a lot going on in my space right now, so it's kind of divided in this conversation. And yet, what's coming up for me is how in a really intimate space, how naked we can be in just our total joy and transparency in the moment. And I'm sorry, I'm not feeling like I'm very cogent in the moment to really answer this question to Anne. So,
well, let me just reflect what I heard you say, Sharona, and I also heard you say that there are other things happening in your environment, so that your attention's a little bit split. But I think what I heard you say that at least enlivened me was that in any moment we can, there's a revealing of our joy, a revealing of our pleasure that is a source of great intimacy, and that we often, you didn't say this, but we often kind of put a lid on that. So there's a deeper level we can go just in terms of expressing our joy and our gratitude. Yes.
Mm. Thank you.
Well, that's for sure.
Yeah. Thank you.
I really resonate with that. I mean, I find myself often holding that back for some strange reason. I mean, I don't want to overwhelm the other person. Maybe I don't know how to control it. you know, it scares me. I don't know.
Is it okay? Is it okay?
Yeah. But yet, what are the people that are most magnetic and charismatic and, you know, that I'm attracted to? And they're people who do that, basically. They're just, they're willing to manifest in Technicolor. Sometimes too much, you know, and then they're, you know, I'm repelled.
So,
I guess it's like Ben was saying, it's a dance. I mean, I notice with different people that it's calibrated differently.
And I guess,
you know, just noticing that is, a step forward. And I'm noticing that again in real time here.
Yeah, and the relationship of intimacy and fear, that we could actually be afraid to express our joy. I mean, it's one thing to express my perversions.
anger. Exactly.
Very few people, right? But that I'm actually edged out to express my joyfulness and my happiness. You know, that's important. How about Dawn?
I feel a certain vulnerability in some of those deep feelings. It's a very sacred part of myself. And if I go and I express that in a way and it's not received and it's not resonated with, somehow I'll feel like I cheapened some sacred part of myself. I think that people negotiate permission to share more intimate parts of themselves, and that something about what we're experimenting with are ways to allow those negotiations to happen much more quickly and to kind of finesse the process that can be so slow, out of which we can actually have those deeper points of contact.
Yeah.
Well, Terry, what really resonates with me with what you just said was that the fear is that we express ourselves and it's not received. And there's this website I go to on Reddit. It's called How Not to Give a Fuck. And it's all about that, actually. It's about express it whether or not it's received. If it's not received, okay, move on. That didn't work. You know, it fell flat. And for people with a lot of social antenna and anxiety, that can really, you can ruminate on that. That can be so painful. You vow never to do it again. And you just end up closing yourself down. And so I like this how not to give a fuck thing. And I recommend it, to, you know, Google it. And it's just people telling their stories about, you know, how my daughter-in-law and, you know, my mother-in-law are having an argument and I was in the middle of it. And all of a sudden I said, I don't care. And it was a liberation. So anyway.
That's a great practice. Being with what is, or on the other hand, for some of us, one of the things that we work with at in the integral circles is working with polarity. So for me, I have to, on the one hand, care less, and on the other hand, care more than I do. So both of those are true. All right, Toria Thompson, you have your hand up. Would you like to make a comment?
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate being invited to join, and it's lovely to be a part of a conversation. I have no idea how large it is or how small.
Right. How many people are on the call? That might be nice to know. How many people are on the call right now?
Does it matter for the week space? Does it have a size? I think the one thing that that affected me was when Ken said a stance of appreciation can open the intimacy with the we space. And I've been doing some reading of Charles Eisenstein's, where he talks about us moving from years and years of moving towards separation to more and more towards union. And that's my background. I don't have the integral background necessarily yet. But so what occurs to me is this: when I'm listening to someone else or listening to you, if the inner dialogue is how I'm different or the same as you and whether I like it or not, I'm not entering the we space. And this sort of stance of, if I'm using intimacy and conversation to become more myself and more separate and more individual, it also precludes me from entering. So especially when I don't like what someone's saying, if I can stand in that stance of appreciation, and I always forget it, but when I can't, I always want to, you know, so hard.
I wanted to appreciate you, but I forgot.
But it is. It's really kind of a secret sauce. So when he reminded me of that in the session you played, it's like, oh, yeah. And then all the rest can kind of fall away. It's not about whether you like me or I like you or you're going to reject me. And then just one other thing I'll say, I know you want to keep it short, and that is when we can enter into a space with people where we've all agreed to take responsibility for ourselves. Then, you know, so if you are saying, you know, no, or you respect my no, you know, I don't want to go there, and it's respected, then I can show up more. So it's that idea of also the container, which I'm hearing you guys create so beautifully today.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that very much. Thank you. You know, a couple of other things that come up for me. So as I said at the beginning of the call, there's some kind of tried and true practices that help bring us into intimacy. And one, as we know, is, building the confidentiality of a circle or the trust of a circle and learning to be transparent, revealing more difficult emotional textures like vulnerability, like anger. And two of the ones that come up frequently within the integral setting is making a distinction between a first-person description, where I'm talking about what's actually true for me in this moment, here and now, or a third-person description. And a third-person description, by its very nature, is always more distant. As soon as we move into talking about how it is out there in that world, the way things are, that is automatically creates less intimacy. As soon as I bring it back to myself, and as soon as I'm able to actually describe and name what's actually happening for me in the here and now, those two things are incredibly important in terms of how we create intimacy. Being able to access my experience, speak from it, and ground it in the here and now, it really often will heighten. And then, you know, I always advise, I don't know how you guys feel about it, but just try to make whatever you're saying slightly sexier, and that really helps as well. That's just a little tidbit. Hey, Marjorie, how about you? Do you have something you want to share?
Yes, this is something that I learned. I think it was either from Deepak Chopra or Wayne Dyer many years ago. And they were saying that intimacy is into me, I see.
Oh,
and
nice.
I take that to mean that when I'm in intimacy, if I'm the more that I'm willing to allow myself to see myself in the other person, the deeper I can go into that. And again, it speaks to the shadow, I think, a lot.
That's so interesting you would bring that up, because guess what is next on the agenda?
And I think, you know, by the same token, it's also how willing am I ready to allow the other person to see themselves in me. It kind of works both ways, you know.
Yeah, and what am I willing to see in myself, and what am I willing to let other people see in me? Absolutely, very good.
Yep.
We're going to take a couple more comments, and then we're actually going to talk about the role of shadow and intimacy. So I'm going to go to Kevin O'Connell now. Be just a sec to open your mic, Kevin, and I'll tell you when it's open.
Hello. There you go.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
Oh, yeah, that's, thank you.
Yep.
That's really powerful, what you just said about the I. And to me, intimacy in this context of this community is like being seen.
Yeah.
And just feeling the pain and the suffering of like feeling isolated in the midst of all these beautiful people and feeling disconnected from myself and not knowing how to get a handle on it, how to get myself out. And in the integral living room last time, it's like I had a couple of miracles happen where I made contact with people that saw through the pain, and it just opened something kind of like in a way that I couldn't get it out myself.
Hmm.
And that was very freeing.
Yeah.
Well,
can I ask you a question now, Kevin, in this moment?
Yeah.
So I heard you say that, you know, one of your experiences, the contrast of being in relationship to people and feeling so alone. Was that comment related to the call, or is that more of a state in your life, generally?
Not in the call, but just kind of like the sense of feeling like an outsider type thing, like
mm-hmm.
projecting, like shadow hugging you guys, because you guys are the
mm-hmm.
master, so to speak, and that
mm-hmm.
puts me in a position where I'm not there, which cognitively
mm-hmm.
I know is not true, but it's kind of
mm-hmm.
like interfacing between the personal and the transpersonal,
mm-hmm.
but there's that gap between actually realizing my big mind
mm-hmm.
and then also observing how I'm in this other personal self, which isn't me.
Yeah, well, and for the purposes of the Integral Living Room, I'm just going to do a quick reframe. I think Jeff and Terry and I consider ourselves to be hosts more than masters, but I totally receive what you're saying about when we're in relationship with people that are holding a particular position, that sometimes it actually separates us from our own knowing and from our own realization. And then the last thing I heard you say that sounded really important to me was just that when you encounter someone who can actually be present to whatever the suffering is, that suffering ceases to be an obstacle. There's some capacity to move beyond it into deeper levels of being. Is that fair?
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, great. It's great to hear your voice, Kevin. Thanks for being on the call. So we're going to take one. Yeah, thanks, Jeff. We'll take another comment from Christine, and then we're going to move into some small groups, because we're going to talk about just including the shadow aspect as part of intimacy, part of the confidence that we start to develop in ourselves and in others. So, Christine, did you have a comment?
Yes, I do. Can you hear me?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Good. I'm actually driving through a lush tropical landscape in monsoonal Australia, and I'm having this very interesting experience of anxiety about intimacy that can happen when I'm working with the people around me in physical geographical proximity who I work with or who I have a non-work relationship with, but who are doing this we space work. And there
mm-hmm.
are a few of them in my life, but who have geographical proximity. The same anxiety is coming up for me right now about exploring this intimacy with all of you who are so far away.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. So let me make sure that I understand. So basically what you're saying is in the course of your everyday life that there is a fear that rises up or an anxiety that rises up in terms of making contact with certain people and becoming more intimate, and that you're actually having that exact same experience online in Australia in the middle of driving through a lush environment, and you must be kind of interested and curious about that.
It's just fascinating. I feel totally drugged. I mean, I'm just somewhere else because, but there's an extra added dimension to it, if I can say this, because in a month's time, I'm going to be leaving here, and I'm actually going to go to the Integral Europe conference. I haven't signed up yet, but on my way to the Integral Living Room and to another conference. So I have this extra
anxiety. You're on the Integral Tour.
It's the Integral World Tour.
Yes.
Of someone who actually lives in a part of the world where how can there be a node of integralists in far north Queensland, Australia, who follow what you're doing with this avid, deep concern and deep enjoyment of how much you've added to my life and to our lives. I'm just having a really blissed out moment.
Wait a minute. You're having an anxiety-laden, blissed-out moment. Isn't that amazing? We always talk about more
anxiety
complexity.
Turns into bliss.
Right. It's all life force, right?
Transformed.
But how contradictory, we're used to this. We live in this sort of, especially an Enneagram 6, loves to live in an ambivalent state of it feels blissful and it feels anxious at the same time. I need to transmute my anxiety into the bliss, but at the moment I'm feeling both now.
Right.
Yep.
Thank you.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well,
Well, I just want to acknowledge the level of self-awareness. My God, thank you. I'm sorry, Di.
No, not at all. Are you kidding? You're expressing your joy. I'm all about it.
Thank
Fantastic.
You.
All right, so we've talked about creating a container of trust. We've talked about transparency, revealing ourselves, and self-disclosure. We've talked a little bit about including, you know, deeper emotional states, vulnerability, about speaking as I, about being in the here and now. And the last thing that I want to touch on is just the importance of being able to bring in the shadow aspects of who we are. So what do we mean by shadow in the integral community? What we mean by shadow is simply the parts of myself that come up that I don't want to identify with. So we call it shadow is anything that I cannot identify as me, right? So you're the angry one, I'm not. You know, you're the unenlightened one, I'm not. Whatever it is that's outside of my identity as me. So what we're going to do now, just as a little way for you to have some one-on-one intimacy, is I'm going to ask Brett Walker, and thank you, Brett and Ben, for supporting our call, the technological side of our call. And we're just simply going to move into, I'm going to ask for you to move into dyads. And you're just going to have 5 minutes to meet someone, say hello to them, reflect a little bit on what's had meaning for you on the call. And then for just a moment, if you'd be willing, just to say the one part of myself that I sometimes don't want other people to see. And just as a little practice of transparency and a little practice of shadow, just to kind of bring out a little bit of what that might be. So, Terry, would you mind role-playing that with me for a minute, or modeling it, I mean?
Sure.
Yeah, so let me just listen, first of all, what's had meaning to you on the call, and then what's the shadow element that you might be willing to share?
Well, I was really, I was touched, I think, as I came forward with some of my shares, certainly I touched into some things that I really felt. And then I was especially touched by Christine's last share and just the raw reality of her soul, you know, being in this quest and being, you know, lonely for a level of being met, you know, that in some ways she's, you know, pressing herself past her limits to find that touched me. And then shifting gears into what parts of myself I'm reluctant to identify with, I think I actually have a harder time identifying with my certainty and my authority and my seniority. I feel more comfortable showing vulnerability and creating a bridge for connection than I do standing in my place of authority and wisdom. And I don't know. It's at the place where I actually stand as a source of strength and wisdom. It's often very hard for me to own that and give the gift as fully as I might be able to. I've noticed sometimes people have reflected that.
Your voice is even fading while you're talking.
Yeah. Yeah. It is. It's work there for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. And
Brother, your gift is welcome here.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. So if you have any questions about what we're doing in this small group exercise, just press 1 on your handheld and we'll come into your dyad and clarify for you. So the assignment basically is you'll be broken into groups of 2. Take a minute or so to reflect on what has had meaning for you in the call. And then just in the spirit of intimacy, in the spirit of transparency and disclosure, just identify some quality in yourself that you have a hard time bringing into relationship. And if you're the listener, just listening and maybe reflecting what you've heard, and then switch. So each of you have about 2.5 minutes. And we'll see you back in the main room in 5 minutes from now at about 8:08 Mountain Time.
And we're back. Di, go ahead.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. It must have been a kind of an interesting thing to meet someone online that you probably have never met before and then reveal something about yourself that's tender. And at the same time, you know, this is a community in which we're practicing and we're growing our trust and we're growing our capacity. And really, we're as Ken said, you know, we're basically the more we repeat, the more we practice, the more we get to know each other, the deeper our relationship comes. And as the relationship gets deeper, then there's room for, as he puts it, more spirit. So I really want to appreciate everybody just for being on the call and for listening and, you know, for bringing your heart to this community. It's wonderful for those of you who are new here and for those of you who have been here before. And if you have the time in your schedule, we would love, of course, to see you in Boulder, Colorado. We'll be doing lots of different work in the Integral Living Room and, as we like to say, having the best conversations of your life. So I hope we see you there. And thanks again for being here this evening. Terry, how about you? Do you want to say a couple of things?
You know, as I wandered around, I listened to different folks having your conversations, and I was touched by it. I just felt the degree of heart. You know, there's a certain courage that it takes to deliver yourself forward, especially in this kind of a funny situation where we can presume some things about each other, but we don't really have a history. And I just felt the courage, you know, the core, the heart in that. And I'm reminded of just how much goodwill we bring together when we gather, and I felt even more excited about the upcoming event. So I like you people.
Right on. Yeah, so thanks, everybody. Thank you, Di. Thank you, Terry. Thank you, Brett and Ben on the tech. It's wonderful to work together as this team with these wonderful people. The Integral Living Room, the event itself is May 23rd through 26th. That's Memorial Day weekend in the U.S., and that's a Friday through Monday. The 23rd is a Friday, and we end on Monday. And so if you can make it, please come. The early bird is still in force, so go to the website, integrallivingroom.com, to sign up if you're interested. And otherwise, our next community call is, I knew I should have looked this up before the call, but I will find it. What
April
is it, Terry?
17th.
You always know.
April
17th. Thank you, Terry. All right, well, again, thank you, folks. Have a wonderful evening, day, and we will see you next time. Signing off, Jeff Salzman, Diane Hamilton, Terry Patton. Good night.
Bye,
and open up the mics. We'll say goodbye, everyone.
Goodbye. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye.
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 Bye. Bye. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Thank
you.
Much for your
presence. See you soon.
I love you. Love
thank
you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Great
bye-bye.
Work, everybody. Thank
bye.
You so much.
Bye.
Good night.
Bye.
Bye.